Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
These are all false accusations that were made. These are false. They're trying to destroy a man.
That's what President Donald Trump had to say to Fox and Friends this morning following the announcement that Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson withdrew his nomination to lead the Veterans Administration. The Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs was investigating allegations that Jackson, the White House physician, had been drunk on the job, overprescribed prescription drugs, and oversaw a hostile work environment. The president called the investigation the work of, quote, obstructionist Democrats. In a statement today, Jackson lashed out, saying, quote, going into this process, I expected tough questions about how to best care for our veterans, but I did not expect to have to dignify baseless and anonymous attacks on my character and integrity. So, once again, politics and drama consumes the VA, a massive, critically important system that provides care for some 9 million veterans. But no matter who runs this agency, there are real, concrete problems to face. The debate over privatization, ongoing wait times for vets, modernizing records. So this hour, On Point, beyond the political chaos, the real needs at the VA, and what's it going to take to fix it. You can join us on air or online. What's your response to Ronnie Jackson's withdrawal? Do you think it was the right move, or do you agree with the president that it was the work of obstructionist Democrats? And veterans, what is first on your list of things to fix the VA, and what's it going to take? How can we do it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first today from Washington is Leo Shane III. He's deputy editor for the Military Times, where he covers Veterans Affairs, Congress, and the White House. Leo, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thanks for the invite. Nice busy day for us here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down in the politics of the moment, but I would love to hear, you know, your take on what's happened with the withdrawal of Ronnie Jackson. I mean, at this point in time, it almost seemed inevitable that we'd get this news today.
It did feel that way, although the White House has been defending him all week long, and has said it was up to him, and seemed to be really digging in the last 24 to 48 hours to protect his nomination. But as you previewed in the opening, there a lot of allegations here, nothing proven, but a lot of questions from senators about accusations that he was drunk on the job, that he was mishandling medication, that he was an abusive boss in a lot of cases, and frankly, the allegations were one set of problems, and the fact that senators were blindsided by them were another set of problems. This is a confirmation process. Usually you've got all the paperwork and you sort of know the pros and cons of everybody before they get up here. A lot of these allegations just blindsided senators and started this whole controversy.
Yeah, I quoted from Jackson's statement about these being baseless and anonymous attacks, but I'm seeing reports here, though, that the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, when they began to interview some of Jackson's colleagues, that those colleagues included many active duty military officers who were giving, not flattering assessments of Jackson. And that worried not only John Tester, the Democrat, but Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican of Georgia, as well.
Yeah, that's an important point. I mean, the confirmation hearings weren't canceled because Senate Democrats were unhappy with this. This was both Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans. Republicans still control the Senate here. So, and there were questions on both sides of the aisle about how much of this might be true, how much might not be true. As you said, Senator Tester, sort of pushing back on these White House accusations that this was just obstructionist Democrats, said that they've talked to 23 current and former service members about this. So not just one or two anonymous attacks, but really what they are seeing as a pattern of potential problems that just haven't been answered by the White House yet.
But you have to wonder, though. I mean, Rear Admiral Jackson is the White House top medical officer. He's doctor to the president. This is the third president that he's served in this position. And in his statement, he said, if the allegations had any merit, I would not have been selected, promoted, and entrusted to serve in such a sensitive and important role as physician to three presidents over the past 12 years. I mean, the Trump administration probably should have vetted Jackson better before putting him forth as the VA nominee. But he makes a point that he was in a highly sensitive position before, so why didn't any of this come out?
Yeah, and that's one of the lingering questions here. We've been talking to a lot of folks in the military trying to figure out who's been in charge of sort of monitoring that office. This is a very unique position within the military and a unique office within all of government. And the answers so far have been pretty unsatisfactory. Nobody's really sure who's got oversight on certain things. There's a various group of people who conducted some of these climate surveys. There were some indications of problems back in 2012, and the Trump administration forwarded these to reporters as this controversy sort of grew over the course of the week. But they cast it as it was a problem with the entire medical office, not really Admiral Jackson. You know, there's certainly ways to read that report that casts some questions on him too. But that remains to be seen. If he decides to stay in the White House medical office in his role as White House physician, or even if he looks for another job within the military, there's going to be a lot of questions about how thoroughly has he been checked out over the last decade, and can he remain in that role, or is there any merit to these accusations?
Yeah. You know, so whoever, I mean, what we really want to dig into in the show today is whoever ends up being the successful nominee to lead the department, it has a huge job on his or her hands. And to that point, I just want to read you, Leo, a quote, a comment that we got from one of our listeners on Facebook. This is from Corey Jagger, who says, "The main challenge will be related to the fact that the organization has had 7 leaders in the past 10 years. And at this point, you have to ask what the purpose of the role even is. The last thing we disabled veterans in particular need is more incompetence and instability in the leadership of an organization that can't reach a state of competence and stability to ensure peace of mind for some of your most vulnerable citizens." Respond to that, Leo.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the really interesting issues moving forward, because this, you know, this whole controversy with Admiral Jackson is not really about VA. This is about the White House and his background and the vetting process. But unlike some of the other problems we've seen with VA, this isn't, this isn't talking about veterans care or veterans benefits or the services they deliver. But that has been the issue for the last 4 years, really since VA Secretary Eric Shinseki was forced to resign following a big wait time scandal and doctoring of medical records back in spring of that year. And we've seen just about every top level VA person since then have a dual role of working to reform the agency, but also working to do some PR, working to sort of burnish the public image of the agency, convince people that it's a system worth saving and not a system that's so broken that it can't move forward. So, you know, this next round of controversy coming off of Secretary Shulkin being fired last month, it feeds into that again. It feeds into this public idea that VA's a mess and that VA, you know, can't do the basic things it needs to, and especially among veterans. There's a lot of concerns that, yeah, I don't, you know, they might not directly deal with the secretary, but what does it mean when the leadership of an organization is in such disarray? Am I going to still get my benefits? Am I still going to be able to go there and get proper health care?
Yeah. I mean, I know that, as you said, you're right, that there's sort of there's a PR aspect to increasing morale and getting the public's confidence back in the VA for whomever leads the administration. But, you know, you noted that wait time scandal in 2014, I believe, that Eric Shinseki oversaw in Phoenix. I mean, that was a serious scandal. Veterans were being taken off, being put on private, like secret lists, and some even died while having to wait. So, I mean, the problems are real and deep, Leo, as you know.
Sure.
I'm just going to ask you to stand by here for a second. You're hearing Leo Shane III. He's deputy editor for the Military Times, where he covers Veterans Affairs, Congress, and the White House. And we are talking about not only with the withdrawal of the nomination of Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson to lead the VA, but the deeper problems, the more concrete challenges facing the second largest government bureaucracy in America that serves some 9 million veterans in the United States. And we really want to get a handle on where the VA itself is now and what's it actually going to take to fix it. So I'm joined now by Paul Rykoff. He's founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. It's the country's largest organization for Iraq and Afghanistan vets. They're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. The mission is to improve lives of veterans and their families. Paul Rykoff, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Magda. Good to be with you.
So, you know, I mean, you guys put out a statement saying, I think very rightly, that this is a time of chaos, politics, and drama that veterans don't necessarily need. So how do we get past it?
That's probably the most important question in America right now. And can we get past it? You mentioned that the turnover at VA secretary really over the last 15 years, and it's important. I mean, roughly every 2 years or so, Leo and I are on, the radio and TV talking about a new VA secretary nominee. There have been four since I got home from my tour in Iraq. So instability is the norm now. And the Veterans Affairs team and workforce and atmosphere has been overwhelmed by chaos and starts and stops and increasing levels of politics. So our veterans are caught in the middle. And I think it's important to note that this doesn't just impact the veterans who use VA, and there are millions of them, but this impacts our national image, how we are viewed by the public, how we're viewed by corporate partners. This person is not just an administrator. They're also the leading veterans advocate. So when there's a shooting or there's an employment push, this is the face of our community. So having this kind of constant twisting and turning and changeover is bad for veterans. It's bad for our country. And I think it's important to note, too, it's bad for our national security.
Mm-hmm.
This impacts recruiting. This impacts retention. If you're a young private serving overseas in Afghanistan and you get hurt right now, you don't know what you're coming home to. So I hope that the human side of this will pierce through all the politics and all the spin, and we can remember that the millions of veterans and their families of all generations are caught in the middle of this.
Yeah. So we've just got like 30 seconds here before the break. But let me just ask you quickly. I mean, you did a big survey of veterans in terms of what they want from the VA and how to fix it. Just tell me briefly, what was the number one thing?
Leadership. And you can see that survey if you go to iava.org. They want to focus on combating suicide. They want to see reform for women's care. But most of all, they want leadership. That's what they expect in the military. And it's what we expect at the VA and in Washington. Mm.
Well, we are talking about the ongoing challenges at the VA and the uncertainty around who's going to lead it. But also, again, more deeply, how do we fix the VA? How do we provide service to the veterans who need it and deserve it? There are 9 million of them who rely on the VA. We got to get this right. You're hearing Paul Rykoff. He's founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Also, Leo Shane III. He's deputy editor for the Military Times. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Listen to the news and wonder, is there anything good happening out there? I'm Mindy Thomas from NPR's Wow in the World. And each week, Guy Raz and I take you and your kids on wild adventures to explore the most wow-worthy news stories on the planet. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Department of Veterans Affairs and who's going to lead it and what it's going to take to fix it. And quite frankly, regardless of who's going to lead it, what the major challenges still are at the VA and how we can improve the services that the VA provides for 9 million American veterans. We'd love to hear of your experiences with the VA. And if you're a veteran, obviously, what is it that you think we are going to need to do as a nation, as political leaders to get behind the real concrete efforts it's going to take to fix this vitally important bureaucracy. I'm joined today by Paul Rykoff. He's founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and also by Leo Shane, the third deputy editor for the Military Times. And Paul, I was looking at the survey that you did of IAVA members, and you asked them, what is the most important quality or qualities in a VA secretary? And these are veterans themselves responding. And the top three were healthcare experience, military experience, and bureaucratic management experience. Now, that's that third one I wanted to talk with you and Leo about, because no matter who comes into to this cabinet level position, one of the first things, the challenges they're going to face is all this controversy over whether or how much to, quote unquote, privatize VA services. I mean, talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, we really need a multi-sport athlete. We need someone who can do a lot of different things well in the middle of a pressure cooker. And you know, our members were, for example, pretty skeptical when David Shulkin, the doctor, was nominated by President Trump for his first VA secretary because he hadn't served in the military. That was unprecedented. But he had served as a VA doctor. He was known in the community because he had run the Veterans Health Administration. But they want to know that they've got somebody in charge that gets it. And I think for our members, you know, their average age is in their early 30s. They're more diverse than the previous generations. They're 20% women. They want someone who's served since 9/11, someone who's been in Iraq and Afghanistan, who understands our health needs, who understands the dynamics of the integration of the National Guard and Reserve. And I think there's another really important point. We need someone who understands the media, because a big part of the job as VA secretary is kind of constant crisis communication. So you've got to be able to respond to what is inevitably going to happen. There's going to be a health issue at a hospital somewhere. There's going to be some kind of an administrative breakdown because the bureaucracy is so big and so sprawling. And how do you handle it? That's in large part what I think sunk General Shinseki, was he wasn't dynamic and quick on the media, and the stories kind of overflowed him. Mm-hmm. And he just got buried, and the White House was a bit caught by surprise when the Phoenix scandal that you referenced earlier happened. So we really need someone special. But there are people out there. You know, for President Trump to say no one can do this job, you know, many of the Veterans Service Organizations recommended that he keep on Bob McDonald, who had previously managed Procter & Gamble,
right,
which has, you know, close to 100,000 employees, a sprawling bureaucracy, very big and tough. You know, that was an option that Trump passed over and instead went with Shulkin and now with Jackson. So there are options out there. And we may find out, you know, within the next few hours who his next pick is. And veterans are going to look for someone who's really top-notch, dynamic, and incredible.
Yeah. So, Leo Shane, let's explore a little bit, though, with about the, again, one of these first challenges that this person faces. And you know, as Paul said, hopefully it is someone incredible. And that is, you know, the controversy that kind of sunk Shulkin, and this controversy over whether or not and how much to privatize parts of the VA's services. I mean, for folks who don't understand in detail, when we're talking about privatizing the VA, exactly what are we talking about?
Well, you know, Paul and I have talked about this a lot because privatization means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But, you know, basically what the conversation has been is how much care should veterans be able to get on their own outside of VA and still have covered by federal dollars. So this has been a big issue really since that 2014 wait time scandal. You know, President Trump during his campaign was saying the veterans should be able to go wherever they want, and if they need help, they should just be able to walk to a doctor and almost just have a voucher to take care of that. A lot of the veterans groups have said that's a plan that would sink VA, would get rid of a lot of the specialized services they have, and would ultimately cost a lot. So this has been a major debate, and one that as you said, Secretary Shulkin was right in the middle of. Now, without a secretary at the helm here, Congress is trying to move ahead, is looking at some options for how do they thread that needle for allowing more flexibility for care, but not allowing so many dollars to flow outside of VA that it cripples the system. But it's tough. It's a tough balance, and it's a tough balance even when you've got somebody who's leading VA, who's helping you sort of balance all those different issues.
Right. And so, I mean, this is such an important thing and very nuanced, right? Because community care programs at the VA already exist, and Shulkin himself wasn't entirely opposed to them.
But, no, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, he supported them and perhaps even partially an expansion thereof. But the question is keeping VA doctors at the center of the sort of nexus of care that veterans would get, whether or not some of it was in the private sector or not. Right, Leo?
Right. Yeah. I mean, about a third, actually a little bit more than a third of all the medical appointments the VA conducted last year were outside of VA hospitals and clinics. So it's not a new idea to have veterans going into the community. But yeah, the question is, how many of these resources go there, and does VA still have a role? You know, a lot of the concerns that I hear from veterans groups are, if there's a guy who has a problem with with respiratory issues or something that seems like it's not connected to the service, their military service, they could go into a private doctor, get screened, and get treated for that, but they could miss things like burn pit exposure or post-traumatic stress or some other military-related illness
right.
that only a VA doctor is going to notice. So there's a lot of folks who want to keep, you know, the VA at the center, as you said, or at least somewhat involved in this process to make sure that serious issues aren't being missed.
Yeah. So, Paul, I'm going to get to you in just a second here, but I want to take a quick call on this point here. Amy is calling from Shingle House, Pennsylvania. You're on the air, Amy.
Hi, Meghna. My husband is a Gulf War veteran, and he's disabled with Gulf War illness. We live, he gets his care at a local clinic, but if he needs any imaging, like an X-ray or MRI or anything, we have to either go to Buffalo or Bath, New York, both of which are about 90 miles away. And there's an imaging center literally three blocks away from his VA clinic that he goes to. So I guess my question is privatization or how to get care closer that's paid for by the VA. How is that working or is it in the works?
Yeah. Amy, thank you so much for your call. Paul Rykoff, do you want to respond to Amy?
Yeah, I mean, Amy and her family deserve the best care possible, and that is what I think everyone is trying to achieve. The question is it achievable? That clinic that's nearby, I hate to say it, may not want to take her husband, may not be prepared to take the husband, her husband, may not want to take other veterans. And there was a recent RAND study that assessed the overall private sector capacity in New York, which yeah. tends to be actually a pretty robust healthcare system, and said that under 10% of private sector care providers were ready for veterans. So there is a bigger issue here, which is bigger than VA and bigger than veterans, which is what is the future of healthcare in America and what is the future of government? And that's what's happened over the last few years is the VA and veterans care has become in the crossfire of a larger political battlefield. You know, the same arguments around Obamacare, around the future of government, have now washed over VA. So this is really about the role of government. When it's at its best at VA, it's the GI Bill, and it's doing a great job of sending millions of veterans to college. When it's at its worst, it's Phoenix with backlogs and veterans waiting for care. And there's always been a blended system, but the fight that's underway right now is not for full privatization, but to expand privatization. And some forces opposing veterans groups are doing it for ideological reasons, political reasons. Others are doing it for business reasons because they would benefit on the business side for having a bigger piece of that pie. The important data point that I try to share often is it's almost $200 billion in play. You've heard a lot over the last couple of weeks, second largest bureaucracy mm-hmm. in the federal government. That's true, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that money is in play, and frankly, a lot of folks want a piece of it. And that creates what we've often called the Veterans Industrial Complex. It's almost similar to what you saw at the Department of Defense after 9/11, when Halliburton and KBR and new companies came in and took over things that used to be done by the military. That's what is in play now. Some want more of the things that VA does to be done by the private sector. Sometimes they can do it better. Sometimes they can't. So it's this great experiment that veterans groups are really cautious about, especially in a time of war with so much complexity and changing demand.
Right. I mean, so Leo Shane, this is exactly the balance that whoever leads the VA, that's the challenge that they have to strike some kind of balance there, because I mean, I do know that some veterans groups are saying that like veterans deserve more choice and quicker access to medical care, and maybe that may come through the private sector. I mean, Paul's right about the private sector overall. There's no way it could handle the specialized needs that a lot of veterans have, plus the numbers of them. But so it's, I guess the question is, you know, what are the you're hinting at this earlier, like what are the plans right now, maybe fomenting on Capitol Hill that might expand that choice, but does it put to rest the worry? Sorry, I'm talking out loud, thinking out loud here, but I'm just wondering if it puts to rest some of the worries that I know a lot of veterans group have, that when you siphon that money out, like Paul was talking, that really what you're doing is hollowing out the VA as a whole.
Right. No, look, if these were easy answers, they'd be done by now, right? Somebody would have come by and come up with the plan. So these are pretty complicated things. There are plans in the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee that have received broader support than past plans that would loosen some of the rules for where folks can see private care now. Right now, a lot of the plans have pretty strong restrictions on how far you have to live from a VA hospital or how much wait time you have to face. So this would change some of those rules, and this would give veterans a couple of free, essentially, emergency room visits in the private sector, so that if there were some emergencies, they'd be able to get closer access. But a lot of the issues with these plans right now are the details and the implementation. You can't write legislation to cover every single thing that might come up. So as the last caller had, there may be a plan that allows her husband to go to certain doctors but not to other ones. So the one down the street might still not be available, but one 10 miles away might be willing to take her.
Yeah.
So right now the concern is, they're crafting legislation as best they can, but the next step is going to be, who's the administrator who's going to implement all this?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the next VA secretary, and what is his or her leadership team going to look like as they take this legislation and put it into effect over the next year or two?
Yeah.
And that's where you get into the real big concerns of how much of this just becomes a free-for-all with, let's let veterans do whatever they want, and if the costs go out of control, costs be damned.
Yeah. Paul, I know you want to jump in here, but I actually just want to take a call, if that's okay. Randy is calling from Corydon, Indiana. You're on the air, Randy.
Hello, Magna. Yes, I'd have to say that, honestly, there's the VA is understaffed, and the VA does provide veterans with some specialized care. You cannot expect to provide the proper care if you don't have the personnel, and if the understaffing is enough of a problem that then you have turnover in the personnel.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, my experience overall with VA is pretty good. It's good.
But Randy, I take your point about that you can't meet the needs of all the veterans who require VA services if you're understaffed, and that's kind of a problem that can cascade over time. Thank you so much for your call, Randy. I want to bring in another guest in here who might be able to speak exactly to what Randy was saying. She's Nancy Schlichting. She's joining us from Detroit. From 2015 to 2016, she was the chair of the Department of Veterans Affairs Commission on Care, a bipartisan commission designed to examine the Veterans Health Administration. She's also the retired CEO of Henry Ford Health System, a $5 billion healthcare organization that she led through quite a dramatic financial transition. Nancy Schlichting, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hello, Magna. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you here because as the chair of this Commission on Care, I mean, you were tasked with coming up with ways to shore up VA, and you actually had some very specific recommendations. I'm just wondering, you've been hearing this conversation that I've been having with Leo and Paul. We were kind of looking at privatization specifically, but whoever comes into leading the VA next, I mean, what would you suggest is the first thing that he or she try to take on?
Well, obviously, this is a very complex task, and the work of the commission put together basically a strategic plan for the next 20 years. And we focused on all of these issues and particularly tried to find the right balance around privatization, because today, actually, about a quarter of the care provided to veterans is provided in the private sector because the veteran system can't do it all. But we wanted to create a more integrated model, basically to have the private sector working hand in glove with the VA in each marketplace to make sure that the best care is available for our veterans. And that's a complex thing to actually design and to figure out how to do.
Mm. And so, was there any progress made in even beginning to create that design?
Yes. Actually, I think Dr. Shulkin, during his tenure and before the Trump administration took over, there was real interest in trying to find that balance between the private sector and the VA, and really work with veteran service organizations to make sure that the system didn't collapse as more care was delivered in the community, and to also look at issues like information systems to make sure that there's interoperability and that communication and data information is transferred across the lines of the private sector into the VA and vice versa. Because clearly that's where care gets coordinated more effectively if that's in place.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read an op-ed that you wrote in the Washington Post, and you also recommended there, I mean, it's just, I'm thinking about the caller we had, Randy, who was saying that just staffing is inadequate to meet the current needs of the VA, let alone future. And in the Washington Post, you said that Congress could or should pass legislation to really evaluate and plan for the future needs of the VA, you know, because we've
Absolutely.
Seen significant growth in outpatient demand.
Yeah, and clearly staffing is tough in all healthcare organizations. You know, running Henry Ford over the years, you know, we faced our own challenges, as the private sector does. But the key is to create a great environment, to have a good culture, to pay people in a competitive way, and that some of our recommendations related to the personnel systems that are often very difficult for people to even get a job in the VA. It takes too long. It's very bureaucratic. And frankly, some of the compensation, particularly for leaders, is way below the private sector level. So you're not always going to attract the best people in those jobs unless that's has at least reasonable equity.
Yeah. Paul Rykoff, I know you wanted to comment a little earlier. We've just got about 30 seconds before the break, but I wanted to give you a shot before I have to take a break here.
The politics have gotten so high that at this point, we're saying the word choice. Like, veterans want choice. Who doesn't want choice? Everyone wants choice. But that's been a manufactured option in the national dialogue because that's how high the stakes are now. A lot of money and political resources have been built into creating that lingo. And it underscores how this entire community has been cannibalized by politics.
Well, you're hearing Paul Rykoff, Nancy Schlichting, and Leo Shane III. We're talking about the challenges, the immediate challenges that the Veterans Administration still faces, regardless of who's at the helm. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the real ongoing challenges at the VA, regardless of who's at the helm and what kind of leader it's going to take to fix all the problems at the VA and improve the quality of service that it provides for 9 million American veterans. We're speaking with Leo Shane III. He's with the Military Times. Paul Rykoff is founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And Nancy Schlichting, she is the former chair of the Department of Veterans Affairs Commission on Care. You know, Leo, before the break, Paul mentioned again, as he has a couple of times, I think rightly so, that the actual sort of concrete advances that the VA can make or is in the process of making repeatedly gets derailed by these political upheavals here. And there's one specific one I wanted to talk about because I think it's just so telling that the Trump administration had begun this ambitious $16 billion plan to really upgrade the medical record system at the VA, long overdue. And now, all of a sudden, is that also up in the air?
Yeah, we'll see. VA put out a statement yesterday saying that they are still working on it, but the folks I've talked to have said that that really got significantly derailed by Secretary Shulkin's firing. So a lot of concerns. You know, this was a much-hyped accomplishment by the Trump administration last summer. For the first time, they were going to really get VA medical records on the same system as Department of Defense medical records. A lot of potential benefits of just seamless transition as folks come off duty. Now this, you know, it's a 10-year project. It's going to take a long time, but the initial work needs to get done now if it's going to get done in 10 years. And for now, that seems to all be stalled.
It's so interesting because you've been reporting how politics really did kind of mess all of this up, because what was the CTO at the VA stepped down, and then the president appointed a temporary CTO, Camilo Sandoval, who was the former data operations director for the Trump presidential campaign. And
now there's all sorts of questions about who can actually move ahead with the contract and whether or not the White House even wants to move ahead with the contract. And who's the advocate? You know, this gets into, if you don't have strong leadership at a massive agency like this, there's lots of issues that fall through the cracks. You know, Paul mentioned earlier that suicide prevention
yeah.
has been one of the main issues that Secretary Shulkin has talked about for the last year. Obviously, VA is still committed to that, but having the VA secretary speak about that as a national priority and as a national focus is very different than having it just as another thing that VA does. So it's another missed opportunity when you don't have VA leadership to really be engaging the public in the problems of veteran suicide and potential solutions.
Right. So, Nancy Schlichting, I mean, this must be incredibly frustrating because aligning and modernizing the VA's record-keeping system with DOD at the very least would have presented or hopefully someday will present a, you know, an enormous change and benefit for the system.
Yeah, we actually talked a lot about the IT systems and the need for integration with the DOD. We thought the decision that Dr. Shulkin made to go with Cerner, which was a company that the DOD had already selected, made a lot of sense. But, you know, the issue that has already been talked about that is so daunting is this constant turnover at the top.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard to lead any complex organization without sustainable leadership over time, and particularly to implement the kind of transformational change that we're talking about. You really have to have, you know, a top leader, someone who can manage complexity, who has been through tough times, and then allow that person to do their job.
Yeah. So Leo, Nancy, and Paul, if you allow me, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us, and I just want to roll through a bunch of them so we can let them have their say. Laurie is calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. You're on the air.
Hi, Magna. About 3 years ago, a friend asked me to speak to a friend of theirs who was having some issues and problems, and I did. And within about 5 minutes, I thought, this man has early onset Alzheimer's. I'm a psychiatric nurse. And he was a veteran, but he had no idea where his records were or his number and had never registered with the VA. So I called the VA, and it was going to take 2 to 3 months to apply for and get the numbers that were needed for him to be seen at the VA. Luckily, another friend had a friend at another VA hospital who said, this is what you need to do. You need to be pushy and ask to speak to a department head, which I did. I called back. I got through to the department head, and it took them 2 minutes at that VA hospital to locate the numbers that he needed, the records that they needed to get him registered, and they were able to get him in through the emergency room the same day. This goes to the issue of the red tape.
Yeah.
People who are in dire need of services need to go through to be seen at the VA.
Laurie, thank you so much for your call. So, you know, one powerful story there about it, the need to cut the red tape at the VA. I mean, honestly, to a certain degree, it sounds a lot like the hoops that people have to jump in through in the private sector as well. But Steve is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air, Steve.
Hi, Magna. I really appreciate you taking my call. I'm a veteran from the Vietnam era, and I have been going to the VA for a number of years, and I have always been treated with the highest amount of respect. They always ask me how I'm doing emotionally. I haven't had any issues along those lines, thank God, but they always, I trust them like I trust nobody else. I mean, they're not motivated by money. If they tell me I need something or a procedure or something done, I know that that's real stuff, and I need to act on that. So I really appreciate the VA and everybody what everybody does. But anyway, that's it.
Steve, thank you so much for your call. It's good to hear, you know, that it's a complex bureaucracy providing service for millions of people, that there's the good along with the challenges as well. Let's hear from Laura, who's calling from Norwalk, Ohio. You're on the air, Laura.
Hi, Magna. My father was a 100% disabled Vietnam veteran, so we spent a lot of time in VA clinics. He had an incredibly complicated medical history, and he was always taken very well care of medically. But one of the things that was sorely lacking for him, and a thing that's sorely lacking for people in my generation, I'm in my 30s, is the mental health care. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, men my age who are drinking themselves to death because they're not getting the proper medication and the proper treatment for mental health. And there's like, what is it, 21 suicides a day by our veterans.
Yeah.
And it's something that really needs to be addressed. And,
yeah.
And I'm just calling to comment on that.
Laura, thank you so much for your call. I mean, Paul Rieckhoff, this is something you've brought up repeatedly because it's something that so many veterans are saying that they need more assistance.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to kind of break this down in a way that maybe encapsulates the last decade and a half. We've been talking about this electronic record keeping system, and it seems like an obvious thing. It's an important thing. It's an urgent thing. In 2009, I, along with many other veteran service organizations, stood at a press conference in Washington to announce that they were kicking off an electronic record keeping system. They promised in 2009 they were going to fix this. I think Leo was probably there. This is the world we operate in. Big promises that were made by presidents that are never fulfilled, ambitious plans that are never executed, and veterans that are often left behind and increasingly politicized. We see from our members the care they receive is generally very good. That's a side of the story that isn't told. Mm-hmm. So our organization in particular is trying to empower the voices of our community in the same way you have on this show today. If you go to IAVA.org, we survey thousands of veterans every year about their health care, about how they feel about the politics in this country, about how they feel about public awareness. And what we see time and time again is they feel like everybody really cares, but they fail to deliver. And I think that's the bottom line. Here we go again. It's history repeating itself. And this is really a conscience calling moment, not for Washington, but for America. We can't just sit back and wait for a president to install a magical VA secretary. We need every person and every American and every community to step up. Even if VA was perfect, we'd still need everyone working together like spokes on a wheel. And that's what we need right now. It's almost like a call to war. We didn't rally our country after 9/11, and we haven't rallied our country since. And maybe this is a defining point to make it happen.
So, Paul, I'm really glad you brought this up because I've been kind of trying hard to suppress a certain sense of frustration here. I mean, I'm glad that we can talk about this, right? I'm glad that radio stations across the country are airing this right now so they can hear you and Leo and Nancy speak about this in an informed, analytical, passionate way. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, sometimes, like you said, for years and years and years, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of
We're exhausted. I mean, this community is exhausted, and this is a community that was already exhausted by a decade and a half of war. You know, it's commonly talked about the suicide rate. 20 veterans a day are lost to suicide. Most of them are older veterans, Vietnam veterans who were left behind decades ago. So this is about the soul of America. This is a conversation that is overdue. It's happening on NPR stations and on Twitter right now. I've been tweeting the voices of veterans nationwide, but it is history repeating itself. Every couple years, this group of people is on NPR talking about VA failures.
So who's
really going to fix it here? When are we really going to have a president who can execute and deliver on this sacred promise that our country has? And if the president can't, the American people need to step up and do it themselves.
And so how do we do that? That's what I'm wondering. I mean, how do we transform all of this talk and conversation into action? You keep talking about people stepping up. Practically speaking, what does that mean?
In every single community, there's something you can do. Find a local veterans group. Go volunteer. Donate right now. Learn more about these issues. Do research. I mean, people in this country generally philanthropically support, you know, their faith-based initiatives, education, you know, where they went to school. The veterans philanthropy world is basically non-existent. Most Americans assume that the government's got it covered, and nonprofits like ours are overwhelmed with demand. We have a case management program that does everything from suicide to homelessness, master's level social workers who take calls every day. We've had to shut it off because we don't have enough people. And that's true of so many of our service providers nationwide. In the midst of all this political drama, philanthropy is moving in a different direction. Mm-hmm. This political dialogue actually makes it risky, and you're not going to see corporations wrapping themselves in the American flag and in camouflage like you did years past if it continues to be so politicized. Yeah. So our fate is inextricably linked to all this drama, and as President Trump's stock falls around this, unfortunately, in some ways, so does ours too.
Yeah. Nancy
and that's the real damage.
Nancy Schlichting, you've been very patient here. I'm wondering if you want to have a say.
Well, a couple comments. One is that I think when it comes to things that we can do in every community, particularly for health care. I mean, I was embarrassed running the Henry Ford Health System that I had never met the director of the VA Medical Center in Detroit. And in this process, I realized that, you know, that kind of collaboration would be very helpful on both sides, figuring out ways that private sector can do a better job treating the veterans that they care for and working to include and engage the VA leaders of the various medical centers and clinics across the country. There's a lot we can do together to improve the community support for veterans, and that's very exciting to me. The other thing is mental health care. I mean, mm-hmm. This is a crisis for our country, not only in the VA community, but also across the board. And we have got to provide, you know, more supports, more collaboration, more safety nets for all people, but particularly veterans. Very, very important that we help support them in every way we can.
Yeah. Leo Shane, you're there in Washington as well. You're watching the people who could most immediately have an impact, positive or negative, on the VA. I mean, are there other pieces of legislation, other key congressmen, senators that we ought to be paying closer attention to?
I actually think there's going to be a pretty big push coming up next month for lots of different issues, not necessarily the ones we've been talking about here, but you know, some of that privatization healthcare stuff, but also things like medical marijuana, things like veterans caregiver benefits. There's a lot of attention in Congress on these. The problem has been, you know, with the Trump administration taking a lot of the oxygen out of the room, and with the just political fights in Washington, how much does it advance? So, to your earlier point of, you know, what can people do? You know, Paul's not talking about this week and doesn't do things the rest of the time. You know, the veteran service organizations and the veterans groups are out there all year round talking about important things that folks can engage on. So it shouldn't always have to take just the VA secretary nomination imploding for people to notice there's important veteran news going on. And I think, you know, next month will be an interesting time to see how much outside attention some of these other issues that the veterans organizations have been pushing for really get, not just from lawmakers, but from the public
yeah.
as well.
I want to get one more call in here because I think we've got just enough time. Joel is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. You're on the air, Joel.
Hi, Magna. My father-in-law was a World War II vet, and he suffered a brain tumor that basically eventually made him require to live in a nursing home. And he went to the sixth floor of the Veterans Administration Hospital in Syracuse, New York, and he was cared for 6 months in skilled nursing. And he passed away on Christmas Eve with zero bed sores. I mean, the people that were there that took care of him were the kindest, most generous, and gentlest people we've ever known. And, you know, the VA has people like that. I mean, we should definitely celebrate that. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Joel, thank you so much for your call. Nancy Schlichting, we just have a little bit of time left here. I mean, I think we'll come back to where we started, and that is the VA needs a new head. It needs a new leader. I mean, are there any particular people that you think are the president ought to be considering?
Well, I think there are a couple of competencies that individual has to have, plus a great heart and commitment to veterans. But certainly understanding complexity and being able to turn around things, because this is a turnaround. This is a transformational job. And so it's going to be very important to have someone with that level of experience.
Yeah.
I also think the last caller made such an important point. How do you build a positive culture if you don't lift people up?
Mm-hmm.
And clearly the people I met within the VA system and the veterans that I spoke with, you know, really said a lot of what we've heard on this call. And that was about, you know, the fact these are amazing people, committed people, and a good percentage of them are veterans, serving veterans. So, you know, let's not cast a big, you know, negative kind of approach to the VA. It's just unfair.
Yeah. Paul Rieckhoff, we've just got a minute left to go here, and you get the last word today.
VA is, there's a running line in the veterans community, that VA should stand for Veterans Advocate. I think that's really what we need from a new secretary. But in the place of that, the American people can be our advocates. They can vote on our issues. They can support veterans in leadership. And most of all, Memorial Day is coming up. So rather than just, you know, taking a minute to reflect on Memorial Day, do something. Like, there are plenty of veterans organizations that need your help. And Veterans Day, Memorial Day, July 4th should be more than just about fireworks and celebrations. It should be about unity. And the veterans community can be a bridge in these very difficult times to unify our country and provide hope. They're incredible leaders. And we say it all the time. They're not a charity. They're an investment. If the American people stand with us and make that investment, it's going to have so many great impacts far beyond veterans affairs.
Well, Paul Rieckhoff is founder and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He served as an Army First Lieutenant and Infantry Rifle Platoon Leader in Iraq from 2003 to 2004. Paul, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Magna. Really appreciate it.
And Nancy Schlichting, from 2015 to 2016, she was chair of the Department of Veterans Affairs Commission on CARE, and she's also the retired CEO of the Henry Ford Health System. Nancy Schlichting, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Magna, very much.
And Leo Shane III, deputy editor for the Military Times, where he covers Veterans Affairs, Congress, and the White House. We've got links to Leo's reporting at onpointradio.org. Leo, thank you so very much.
Anytime. Great to talk to you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.